Welcome to the Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast, conversations with leaders who made difficult decisions and built lasting legacies. I am Rick Williams. I speak and write about how leaders can be more successful. My best-selling book, Create the Future, is your essential guidebook for making difficult decisions. This podcast is an opportunity for me and for you to hear how leaders with a wide variety of backgrounds have managed the challenges they faced, made difficult decisions, and had courage when going forward is tough. You will learn important lessons from other leaders. You will find that engaging with our 30-minute conversation will be a great investment of your valuable time. So let's get started. Welcome to the Create the Future podcast. I'm Rick Williams. The Create the Future podcast is a forum for leaders to bring difficult decisions they've made for their company or any organization, and in some cases to themselves, to the broader leadership community. My goal with this podcast is for you to learn from the stories of leaders very much like yourself, as they've gone through difficult leadership decisions and making choices that they had to make as a leader for their organization so that you will become a better leader for your organization. So we have a great guest today who I know you're going to learn a lot from hearing his stories about making a really tough decision for the direction of his company. So Adam, I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction to you. It's Adam Pavlitz. And Adam is the CEO and president of Anago Cleaning Systems, and they're based in Florida. I told Adam before we got started that I actually just came back from time in Florida to my base here in Boston, and my gosh, I'm ready to go back to Florida right now with all the cold and wet we've gotten here. So Adam, take a minute and introduce yourself. I should just start by saying that you work with aspiring entrepreneurs to help them create businesses for themselves. I'll at least give a little bit of an introduction to you. But Adam, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us a little about your life journey and your career to get to this point before we get into the discussion about the choices you had to make for the direction of your company.
Sure. So first, Rick, thank you for having me. Appreciate the time today. So I am the CEO and president of Anago Cleaning Systems. We are a three-tier commercial cleaning franchise company. I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with a traditional two-tier franchise, right? Like McDonald's corporate and then the folks who own the restaurants. Anago is a three-tier franchise, which is unique to the commercial cleaning industry. The way that works is I'm at the corporate office. We sell what we call a master franchise. And so that's someone who owns like a major metro area. So, you know, Philadelphia, Boston, Atlanta, you name it. And then they are essentially a franchise business within their territory of their own. So then they're selling what we call janitorial franchises. And within that territory, they're selling the janitorial franchises and then supporting them with sales and marketing and back office administration. So kind of the easiest way to think about it is, from flipping it upside down, right? And so you have your janitorial franchise. These are people who own independent cleaning businesses. They learn the chemicals, the equipment, keep the buildings clean. But then the question that our business model kind of hypothesized was, okay, but you know, where do they get their accounts from and how do they support it? Because if you own a cleaning business, it's 24/7, right? You're sales and marketing all day, and then you have to go clean all night. And so it's, you know, you don't have a business anymore. You have a job, right? You're just on 24/7, which is crazy. So what our model does is it says, let's break apart the daytime and the nighttime work and essentially have two separate businesses handling them. So you have your janitorial franchise handling the cleaning of the facilities. And then you have your master franchise who does zero cleaning, and their sole role is, you know, they're focused on the web lead advertising. They hire the salespeople, and then they hire the back office accountants to handle like the billing and collections. Kind of a complicated model, but it creates a cool synergy where, I mean, everyone's really saving on overhead because Your janitorial franchisees don't have any sales reps that they got to pay for, or websites, or anything like that. And your master franchise doesn't have all the, the labor and the chemical and all those sort of costs. So everyone's saving along the way. I joined Anago in 2009, so it's showing my age here. So it's been almost 17 years this fall. And my father actually founded the company. I joined. He founded it in 1989, so I didn't. I had no intention of being part of the family business. My background's finance. I joined basically 20 years after he had started it. I was at IBM. It was 2008 at the time. They did this huge round of layoffs during the, the Great Recession then. I wasn't laid off. I was actually one of the analysts who I was given like employee numbers and exit packages and was helping them determine who was getting what. And I'm probably mid-20s at that point. And it leaves a pit in your stomach when you're doing that as one of your first, big career, your first big career opportunity, and you're, working on exit packages. And I thought, I could easily be at IBM for, 10 years, 20 years, and then they hire some other 20 something year old kid who's, determining my fate. And I go, I don't like it. And I was down, I was speaking with my dad, and he goes, "Man, I think I got the tiger by the tail with this whole Anago thing. You should come check it out." And it was about 6 months later that I joined. And his exact words were, "You've left your highfalutin finance job, and now your first job at Anago is going to be, I was a telemarketer by day and a franchisee's assistant at night cleaning a daycare." So I quite literally, I've done it all. I moved from there to sales, to customer
You
service,
start on the ground floor with a mop.
literally the ground floor with a mop and a 55-gallon drum, garbage pail full of dirty diapers. I mean, it was humbling to say the least. And so I, moved up through, and that was in the South Florida Master Franchise Office. I moved through the positions there, and then ultimately came to the corporate office. By then I'm in my late 20s, call it, and my job was traveling the country, meeting with our master franchise owners. And I kind of took it as, what am I going to offer them, where they've been in business for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years before I ever got there. And so it was very much just like a, how can we help you? What can we do at the corporate office to help drive your business and help grow your revenue, grow your profitability, and so on. And so I took a very servant leadership approach as I climbed the ranks, which I feel like we still kind of hold to this day. I was appointed CEO in president in 2015, CEO in 2018, and I've been driving it ever since. And probably the first handful of years was like learning how to CEO. I had never held that role before, and now, by no means am I an expert, but I think I've learned a few things along the way.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about this part of your journey about you came in when your dad had founded the company and he was still there, I presume. So, what was your relationship with your dad as the founder? And I presume he was still the CEO at that point. I think people will benefit from hearing about that experience for you.
So yeah, we he was running the business at the time. I was just working my way up to, he wanted me to know every position. He goes, "You have to know everything and know what everyone does." There was an intention, of course, for me to, eventually take over. But it was it, he was like, "I'm not going to bring you in as like, director or general manager or something like that. You have to earn up. People have to, know that you're the guy they need to go to if they want to get stuff done." And so, I think he had a good vision for how to lay that out. And when you earn your stripes by, going out to all the franchise territories and meeting with everyone and saying, like I said, "How can I help you?" And then delivering on that, I think it earns the respect of the employees and the franchise owners. But it was good. I mean, we probably talked, a little bit every day, and until he passed in 2023, but until he passed, we were probably having lunch at least, once every couple of weeks, and just, "How's it going? What's the latest?" Sometimes we talk sports, sometimes we talk shop, it just depends. But great relationship all the way. Even though, I mean, after I had been became president, we joked that we would say, he'd come in to rustle papers and ruffle feathers. It would that's the family business dynamic is always that, if, especially if you're working for a parent, they're used to doing it their way and seeing it done how they've done it. And so letting go of the reins is not the easiest thing. And sometimes he would give me hell, and other times it would, he'd give me his backing. But I think that's, I mean, it's essentially, where, in to some degree, it is working for, it's almost like working for a very friendly PE firm. You know what I mean? Like, you have reports you have to have in every month. You have to have, numbers that you have to hit. But at the same time, again, you could also talk about what's going on in the news, or what's going on with the football teams, or whatever else along the way. But I consistently, I'm a hard driving person. I'm very like type A wired, and so there was rarely an opportunity for him to critique the growth we were experiencing. And so yeah, very, very, very good experience. I would say the biggest thing for me was, he made it clear, like, don't join if you don't want to, like, really, like, be all in. I think a lot of family businesses make the mistake of where, a parent or a grandparent or whatever is the founder. They bring in some family member, and that family member is just sort of like, well, this is the next thing, the next logical step I'm supposed to take. I'm supposed to go to graduate school and then go to the family business. And a lot of times, if it's not what they're passionate about, I think that's why, the statistics on like second and third gen businesses are kind of, they're not great in terms of success rates, right? Because, it the son or daughter is getting in, and it's just, they're not, their heart's not in it. They just felt like that was where it was to go. So he was big on, like, you need to want to be here, or, I love you and I'll support you, but don't work here.
Well, I apologize if I'm taking advantage of you in this instance, because this story is one that, as you said, is common to an awful lot of family businesses. And I know we want to talk about some tough decisions you had to make, but I think it's worth just staying on this for a few more minutes, because you are exactly right. Many generational, where you pass on to the next generation of family business, don't work because, as you said, that next generation, it's not their passion. And so they're sort of going through the motions, and you really have to wait until either a generation after that or leadership turns on to somebody else before the business can really flourish again. And that doesn't sound like what happened here, because your dad insisted that, either fall in love with this or go find another job. I mean, those are my words, but I'm hearing some version of that. I don't know. Did he bring you into any tough decision making he had to make and say, "Hey, I'm gonna have to do this. What do you think?" Or did you were you able to have dialogues like that with him as you were kind of going through the process of learning how to do all this yourself?
So that was part of, part of the training program, essentially, was like, anytime he was having a, any of the big meetings, or I was in the room. And so I got to see, how he did business, how he thought, how he, how he would interact with, whether it's a client or a prospect or, a franchise or whatever it may be. And then when there were the, the board meetings, again, I got to be a fly on the wall a lot of times. And then as I got deeper into the business, it would be, and hey, what do you think? And obviously you have to come in first. It's like, just sit back and look, right? And see how things are currently going. You don't want to just start coming in and going, all right, we're going to change this, we're going to do that. It's just see how everything operates as is. One of the lessons I learned from Terry Mollica, he was the former president of Antigo before me. He was talking about, and I forget the exact name of it. There was a some Buick engine, and they were trying to copy the Germans. And so they got some part from BMW, and the part they had I'm sorry, it was the other way. The BMW was trying to copy something from the German from the Buick engine, and there was this rough spot that was like a some kind of padding or whatever on whatever this engine part was, and the Germans smoothed it out because they go, oh, we're the German engineering, everything's precise, and when they smoothed it out, the engines wouldn't start. And they discovered that that was actually something that was like, I guess, kicking off a spark, or I don't remember the whole story. I'm butchering it, I know, but his whole point was, before you come in and try to smooth something out, maybe you need to find out if the rough spot there is intentional. And so I, like I said, I started and just was a fly on the wall. Ultimately, then got to be, in the decision-making conversation, as I progressed throughout my time.
Well, that's great. So I know you wanted to bring to our audience a time when you had to carefully think about, gee, is this the right direction for us to be going in, and make some decisions that really changed a lot of what you're doing. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I have 20 of those stories.
Well, pick at least one good one to start with, and we're going to go to another one.
Exactly. No, I mean, I think, the in most recent memory, and probably a longer, longest arc, there was always things coming at, in dealing with, potential franchise turnover, that was dealing with COVID. I would say, it was probably coming out of COVID now. Everyone struggled during COVID. Our business, commercial cleaning, did okay. We grew 8% or something that year, which, is nothing to write home about. But when whole industries are closing and shrinking by half and so forth, and we're growing a little bit, you go, okay, we're doing all right. But there was, a few things going on. Number one, I had, I think it was called the, what was it, the Great Resignation, in 2021, where people were leaving companies in droves. We at Anaco, we've always been a very like people first, culture first kind of company, and so we had never experienced much turnover historically. But in 2021, I mean, I had, I think at one point, within 60 days, I believe it was like our entire marketing team had found, work elsewhere. And so, to the point where I was literally like proofreading, the constant contact emails and stuff like that myself, going like, all right, well. And I said, I go, man, I never want to get that caught that flat-footed again. And one of the things that I realized I had done is, I think a lot of people do this. As you grow in your career from, manager, director, VP, and so forth, you kind of work your way up. What ends up happening is you get promoted because you're doing things your way, and your way tends to work, right? You don't climb to the ranks by being wrong all the time. You're doing it, and you're doing it well. But what ends up happening is, as you climb, all the decision making starts flowing to you, and then nothing gets done without you being involved. And so now you've literally like kneecapped or bottlenecked your own business. And so I said, wait a minute. I learned how to CEO, like I said, from 2018 to probably 2021. And it was, a little bit of baptism by fire. But in 2021, I said, you know what? Everything I've learned about to this point, about like how management and management structure works, I have to unlearn. And one of the big things I did over that period, it was funny. I'm on the board at my church, and the church is rapidly growing. They're like one of the, I literally started going there when they were in like the back of a high school or something like that, in a high school gymnasium. And now they're, one of the mega churches in South Florida. And they were growing. And I said to the pastor there, I go, man, you guys are growing so fast. And the hires, you have to make all these hires so quickly. How are you able to find these people? And they're all home runs. They've all been phenomenal additions to the team. And he told me about a book. It's called Who, by Jeff Smart. I don't get any plugs or anything for it. I adore the book at this point. I read it. And the whole everyone's probably heard of like Who, Not How, and those types of books. Who is just like, okay, I have to hire for such and such position. How do I, what does that job description even look like? How do I, what questions should I ask? Like, I don't know anything about IT. How do I ask this person IT related questions to make sure they know what the heck they're doing? And it gave this incredible blueprint on how to interview and hire and what to look for to ensure that you're only bringing on like A players. Shame on me. I put it in my Amazon cart and looked away for about 6 months. And so finally, you know, all this stuff happens with the marketing team at the time, and I go, oh man, I'm reading this like over a weekend. I gotta get my act together. And since then, I have hired at least probably a dozen mid to senior level, and including C-suite level managers. And what I've realized is I was consolidating all the power to me. And I became where, you know, I was CEO, but I had, you know, the world's worst job. I was working, you know, 70 hours a week, responding to emails and phone calls at all hours of the night and the weekends. And it's like, this is not sustainable. And frankly, you know, the culture had kind of gotten a little sour, right? People are just getting worked to death, and you go, okay, this isn't going to work. And so by doing this, what I did, as I said, I have to hire people that are smarter than me and get out of the way. And that's not easy. I can, you know, it sounds like, oh, you know, what a first world problem to have. You know, you have so much business, you need more people to support it. But it really is, as someone who's wanting to grow a business beyond, I have a job that I happen to own, into, you know, more of a true enterprise. So much of it is, okay, you know, I'm, you know, with all the aspects of a business, sales, marketing, operations, accounting, finance, you know, maybe you're the expert, you know, on one of those, but you're definitely not the expert on all of them. And so it's about bringing people in and saying, you know, so, you know, one of my first hires, in that realm, I hired a COO. And I quite literally, and I've told him this, so I can tell you this. I quite literally, I had a buddy of mine. He goes, why don't you just start writing down a list of stuff you don't want to do anymore? And so I literally had a Word doc on my desktop. It was stuff I don't want to do anymore. And I just was like, I don't want to deal with insurance audits. I don't want to deal with the, you know, the field team operation. And I just, you know, I don't like doing this. I started building that out, and then I turned it into a job description and an ad. And by doing that, you know, I've done that now in sales and in marketing. I have a chief strategy officer for sales. I have a chief marketing officer. I have a chief operating officer. We actually are bringing on someone, you know, for an HR directorship role. It's amazing how easy it is to get sucked into every little aspect of the day-to-day, when really a CEO's role should be like strategy, vision, culture, direction, versus like, you know, double checking expense reports, or, you know, whipping the field team into shape, or, you know. And so for me, doing that, what ended up happening was, you know, I was able to cast a vision for everyone. And I said, at the time we were probably 66, 67 million in system-wide revenue. We weren't small. But I said, I want to be a $100 million brand, and I want to do it in 2 years. And we put together a plan to do it, and we were actually able to accomplish that in 19 months. And so 50% growth, 19 months, we were over 100 million. You know, stupid me, then I stick my neck out again and I go, okay, and now I want to be a $300 million brand by the end of 2028. And we're about halfway there or so. So we have time, but, you know, time keeps ticking. But it's amazing how much we've been able to accomplish in such a short amount of time, when the person who's in charge steps back and says, I'm gonna not make all the decisions. I'm gonna empower people who are smarter than me on their particular function to run their aspect, and just make sure I'm managing, you know, at the expectations level and not in the day-to-day.
So I want to back up for a second here, and because I what I'm hearing you say is sounds absolutely on target for me as somebody who's worked with leaders across a very wide breadth of industries and organizations about the transition to a larger organization of what you as a leader have to do to grow yourself as a leader of a large organization. And but I'm wondering about what, other than sort of coming to a realization, gee, I have to do this, what was hard about doing it? And I don't mean that as a trivial sense, but what I'm trying to get at is where you faced a challenge as a leader, where you had to make a decision that was hard for you to make because it wasn't obvious, you know, what you should do, or I don't hear you having to fire a bunch of people or say to a bunch of people who were with the company for a long period of time, gee, I, as we grow, I'm going to need somebody else who's going to be the marketing director that has a different set of skills than you have, for example. You say you brought in a COO to do things you didn't want to do, but often that separation, another way of talking about it is that in this case, you wanted to be the, I'm going to say, outside person, the person who set the vision, the person who's dealing with franchises as sort of the representation of the company, whereas you wanted somebody to work with you who is going to run all the mechanics of the organization itself. It's not quite how you talked about it, but basically that's what you're saying. What I'm wondering is, was there anything in this that is when you came up to saying, okay, I know I have to do this, I'm not really comfortable doing it because I'm going to have to change the way we've been doing, or some of the people I'm working been working with, my dad worked with. Talk about any of those moments where it was hard for you to make this happen.
All of those decisions, right? Bringing on people doesn't, I'm saying that the glass half full side of, yeah, we had to bring on people, but it also means, when you bring in different leadership, it's conversations with people who had worked for my dad for 15, 20 years and saying, hey, this is the direction we're heading in, and it doesn't seem like you're going to be coming along for that ride. And having those hard conversations, and frankly, you feel like you're letting somebody down when you're doing that. Because I'm very big on, if I've hired you, it's on me to make it work. And so I will try anything and everything to retain someone, even if it means like, hey, let's change your role, change your position. And frankly, there were some people that, it wasn't a fit for. I think there's a lot of roles. There's a lot of companies out there where you go in, you do your job, and you go home, and that's it. That is not this company anymore. And maybe it was at the beginning. This is very much a place where it's like everyone has to be moving forward at the same time, or we're not going to achieve these big goals. And so, I think, it's a lot of it's not one big, oh, this is the decision where, everything changed. It's a series of, a hundred different decisions, 1,000 different decisions where, you start implementing, standard operating procedures, and all of a sudden you really, frustrate the heck out of a lot of franchisees where it's like, hey, we're not doing it the way you've done it for, 20 years. We have to do it this way. This is the only way to make it grow. If I can't pinpoint something in one of those circumstances where it was like this was the moment, other than, like I said, that marketing departure for me. I mean, that was a wake-up call when you have people who've been with you for a decade, and all of a sudden you have this mass exodus to where you're literally doing the most basic functions of a sales and marketing department yourself as the CEO after you haven't done it in a decade. It's one of those things where you essentially say, all right, I can either, kind of slow down and give everyone a breather here, and I make good money, and I sort of, this is my job forever. Or do I really want to scale this and take it to the next level and go to like an enterprise level? And so a lot of it was kind of, how would I describe it? Almost like death to self, right? Where it's like, I have to kill off these aspects of my ego. I have to kill off these aspects of my desire for control. I have to kill off, my need to be in the know at every moment. And for someone who's wired like me, I mean, that's it's not easy. It is something where it's like, I don't want to shut it off. I want to know what's going on. And I think, frankly, I mean, I think that's why so many businesses, small businesses, aren't capable of scaling to a medium and large business, is because founders, I forgot who said it, but it was something like founders are rarely capable of becoming CEOs. And it's that transition that I had to mentally make. Again, it's not, it wasn't, some scenario where it was like, if we don't do X, the whole thing goes out of business tomorrow. But it was life altering for me in that, I had to make this decision, and letting go is extremely hard sometimes.
So I know from our communications earlier that one of the I'm going to use the word decisions, realizations, whatever, that you came to was this decision about what is your fundamental business model? Who is the company anyway? Are you and you had to think about whether the company is a cleaning company or whether the company is a technology company that happens to be in the cleaning business. Now, again, those are sort of my words here, but use that as a, first of all, maybe tell us a little bit about that story, but then use that as a way of talking about you personally as the leader and what you did to come to that realization, to make that decision, and then carry it forth and implement it.
Your wording is exactly my wording. That's exactly how I say it. Do we want to be a cleaning company, or a technology company that just happens to be in cleaning? So for me, I think historically it was always run like a cleaning company. And what I realized is, unfortunately, sometimes the cleaning business is not a very thankful industry. It's definitely a thankless industry, right? Because in any other business model, say a restaurant, right? You can have three levels of experience. You can have a delight experience. You go, food's amazing, waitress was wonderful. You can have a terrible experience, right? You can go, man, the food was awful. It was cold. The waiter was a jerk. Or you can have just sort of that middle of the road, like, it was fine, kind of experience. In cleaning, we only have two. Either, nobody goes, oh my gosh, this place is so clean, I'm going to get my janitor a gift. Either they get to the office and they go, all right, I got to work, and they don't think about it at all. Or they get to the office and they're like, why is my trash can full? Or like, why is the bathroom have a funky smell to it, or something like that? Is this, is the cleaning company even doing its job? And so, in realizing that was sort of the industry we were in, we had to acknowledge that, ultimately, the only time you're going to make a friend in this business is when something goes wrong and you're able to respond and fix it, right? We've all seen the things, the things that have come out where they say, like, pay attention to your Google reviews and make sure you're responding to them regularly and that sort of stuff. But in my business, it goes further, because it's a combination of what is actually clean. Like, do we walk through your building and go, man, this looks good. But the other one is, what is your perception of how the cleaning is, right? And so we could run into the scenario where, I think the building looks great. You look in the corner and you go, there's a paperclip that's been there for a week. You're clearly not vacuuming. And it's like, no, we're definitely vacuuming. We just missed the paperclip. But that perception gap is massive. And so we said, well, wait a minute. We know we're not going to get any accolades for doing our job. Just do your job is what people expect. And number two, we have to capitalize on that perception gap to make friends in this business and to retain customers long term. And so what we did, it was actually, the original idea was my dad goofing around, frankly. He took out his phone, he took a picture of a trash can, and he texted it to me. And he goes, wouldn't it be cool if we could like make it so customers could do that? And the light bulbs went off. And I go, oh my goodness, like, that, there's the answer. And so we actually created an app called CleanCom. We had never, I mean, spent way too much money on this darn thing, had no idea what we were doing. We hired a, a programming company to do it all for us. And what it does is it takes that customer service aspect out of the old-fashioned way of doing it in this business. Most cleaning companies you're going to work with, it's okay, there's some, the trash can got missed. What do we do? I don't know, who cleans this place? Yeah, her name's Maria. Do we have a phone number? I don't know. Maybe the office manager has a phone number. Hey, do they speak English? Does someone here speak the, whatever, Spanish, Portuguese, whatever that they speak? Can you leave a note? I mean, it's this disaster of an experience. And so we said, okay, we know there's going to be, the human element. People are going to make mistakes. We need to be able to, one, identify it as quickly as possible, and two, fix it as quickly as possible. And so that's what CleanCom does. You take out your phone, you take a picture of whatever the dirt is. You can message it. It's all private messaging, right? You're not exchanging cell phone numbers. It has built-in Google Translate so people can, speak in whatever language that they want to speak in. And it automated 2 hour response guarantee. So you're not wondering if they ha the cleaning company handled it. You get a response within 2 hours. And that then was sort of the genesis of, well, what else can we use technology for, right? And there's no new technology in my industry with, better mops or the laser beam, broom or something like that. It doesn't work like that. We all have access to the same chemicals and equipment. So our focus on the technology has now been all around the customer service aspect and how can we speed all of that up. And so CleanCom is for your existing cleaning customers. We're just now rolling out our new software for our franchisees. It's called Antigo Clean Suite. And the idea on that is I'm saving them time, money, and effort because now instead of having a lot of franchise systems, including ours, are guilty of having, 15 different places you got to log in stuff. Oh, here's where you track your leads, and here's where you do your billing, and here's where, and it's just a mess. And so it's a single system that we've created where it is from lead to, through follow-up and sold, to being set up and cleaned by a particular franchisee, billed, collected, zero paperwork unless requested by the client, and zero double entry. And so now we're going, how, in the AI world, right? Because now it's all coming even faster. We're going, now how can we take this even further? And this is, maybe this is my inner nerd, right? I was always a nerd growing up. Didn't work out so well in high school, but it works out pretty well now. And you go, okay, well, wait a minute. How can I take this even further? And so what we're focused on now is what we're calling our radical transparency issue. So you have, a lot of times cleaning companies, they're coming in at night, nobody sees them, nobody knows what's going on. And so what we've done is we said, I want to make sure anytime your office is inspected, you leave a, we call a performance evaluation where you're, evaluating it yourself, or anything that's taken on those pictures on CleanCom, I want that all bundled into a single dashboard that is shared with the customer. I want them to know what areas that we're falling short on, and I want to make sure they know what action plan we have in place to resolve that for them. And so we're calling it the customer health portal. And essentially what that does is it gives you a grade. It's number based, but think of it like a letter grade. Hey, you're at a, you're only at a B minus, and here's the actions we're taking to get you to, A plus level cleaning. And so when you start going down the rabbit hole and all these places that you can build, you realize, like, at the end of the day, this is a people business, and the service we provide is totally irrelevant. At the end of the day, it's how am I building the relationships? How am I building the trust with people, to ensure that they're happy with us when, when they do leave us the keys to their building at night and no one's around. And what we've for, our hypothesis is that, the technology is what's going to get us to build that ultimate level of trust and retain clients for forever if possible.
Well, you are a in a commodity business. You're selling a commodity product, and what you're doing is you're looking for ways to say, yes, we are we're providing a commodity service, but we're different in ways that you, the client, will know. And you're saying it's primarily for how you're interfacing with the client. I honestly, I can't remember now the business school cases that this came up, but the cleaning service business is a classic example of a business in which a competitor can always come in to any building you're servicing and show the client cleaning that wasn't done properly. I mean, it's almost trivially easy for a competitor to do that. So you have to find a way to differentiate yourself within the in the eyes of the client that they will attach value to. And it sounds like you're doing a terrific job with that. I'm just saying before we wrap this up, I would like to hear more about your role as the leader and decision maker in making decisions within the company. You will take this, I hope you'll take this as a compliment, not a criticism. Listening to you, someone will say, gee, this guy has it all figured out. It's easy for him to do any of this stuff. I know that's not remotely true. And it would be, I think people would find it helpful to think, to hear a little bit about how you take yourself, manage yourself as a decision maker going through some tough decision like this. So for example, do you have a board of directors? Do you have a key leadership team that you now say, okay, let's get together and figure out what we're going to do with this next challenge? Or what do you do as a decision maker to help you make the best decisions?
So I have actually two leadership groups that I internal teams that I internal leadership groups that I meet with, and then I'm also I have like an
Okay.
external I'm part of YPO, Young Presidents
Oh,
Organization,
yeah.
and
Yep.
so that's sort of my external network that I also rely on. But
Yep.
internally, I have two. I have our senior leadership team, and then we have it's called an FAC, Franchise Advisory Committee. And so early on in my career, we would come up with an idea. So for example, CleanCom that I was just telling you about, CleanCom initially launched as an abject failure. It was something where we spent, six figures to develop this thing, and then everyone was like, cool, I don't know how to use it. I don't want to use it. I don't want to waste my time. And you go, oh, like what are you talking about? This is going to be the coolest thing ever. And so I very quickly learned, especially in the franchising space, it's not about just making the decision that you know is best. It's also about building the buy-in and making sure your constituents understand it, making sure you really consider from a 360 degree perspective, like how everyone will be impacted, right? Because you can say, okay, I want to roll this out, and then your franchisees come to you and say, okay, wait a minute, I have to train my people on this. Is this extra cost for me? Is this, how does this all work? And you have to make it work for everybody. So for me, I would say it seems like I'm have an easy time making decisions, but I think, I mean, every decision we make is now run through committee. It probably takes 6 months longer than I would like in terms of, building a coalition, building in, getting some buy-in across the multiple franchisees, across my senior leadership team. There's nothing that it's just like I just snap my fingers and it happens. Everything is like, what are the pros to this? What are the cons to this? What, how much money can we make? How much is it going to cost? Who's it going to impact in terms of their time? Who's it going to impact in terms of, how, there's just their general relationships with people. And so I would say it's a lot more political. I don't want to make it sound like a negative connotation there, but it's a lot more
No.
political than I ever expected it to be. It's all it's a game of influence and strategy, and I'm by no stretch a master at it, but I think maybe I sound like it's easy because I've just accepted that this is how this works. And so, if we're in the process right now of we have this vendor we got introduced to, and what they can do is they can compare all of our franchisees' P&Ls using AI, and then figure out, because everyone has different charts of accounts and stuff like that, and over the years, even though we have like, here's our standard one, everyone's, it's, some people have been with me for 30 years, and it's like, well, that's not how I did it in 1999. And so they're able to map all of that, and then essentially give you like, here is like that, the ranges of spend and optimal spends on these various things, and it's invaluable data. So now, if I want to implement that, absolutely, it's a great idea. But what ends up happening is now it's okay, now I have to convince 50 franchisees, master franchisees, like, hey, give me your full P&L with unencumbered access to it. And they're like, whoa, 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 I don't, what, you lift up my skirt? What are you talking about here? And so it turns into something where, okay, executive team, how are we gonna pitch this? How are we gonna promote this? What costs are we willing to bear as part of this? What do we think is reasonable in terms of, carrot versus stick on getting this out? And then, hey, franchise advisory committee, how can we pilot this so you can see it and feel it and touch it and really see what the benefits are? And now that you can see it, how can we help you? And you help us to sway the rest of your constituents to see the value in this and promote it and make sure everyone's getting the value off of it. And so something like, hey, something that could literally be rolled out in 2 weeks is going to take me a year. So, it is, nothing here is easy. Everything is a slow
Right.
grind. But at the same time, I will give it credit that nothing ever comes out half cocked. Nothing is ever half baked. Nothing. Every decision is so thoroughly vetted and thought through that, it limits how many, boneheaded mistakes that, that ever get made by some, some guy like me that's like, hey, let's drop 100 grand on an app. And everyone's like, like, what? Why did we do that?
Well, it sounds to me like you're running the Pentagon from your description. But let me just
Oh,
ask you
built
one
system.
final little element of this, and because I'm really trying to understand you as a leader, as opposed to the broad organization as a leader of the franchise. You said you have a core leadership team within the lead organization. What do you do? And I would say, let me speak for myself as a second, and then you can throw in how you deal with this. I would say, if I was in your shoes, I would say, I have good relationships with some of the people on my team, and some other people are sort of big advocates for what the hell they're trying to do, and so I know I have. Some people are going to be great team players and come up with great ideas. And other people are going to be sort of, I'm in here, and I know I got to get my goddamn job done. And why waste my time with all of this, Adam bringing us in and trying to get us to contribute to whatever he's trying to decisions he's trying to make. What do you do to get your core leadership team to be a creative force for the organization? And by that I mean, I can imagine you're going in and saying, gee, we have a problem we have to deal with about whatever it is. I can make up some problem. Here's what I'm thinking about it. What do you guys think? Are there some different ways we should be looking at this? How do you get the people on your team to take the risk of putting up what might be stupid or crazy off the wall ideas that you could actually grow with if explored ideas outside of what you're currently thinking? I'm trying to understand how you bring creativity and risk taking into your decision making with your core team.
It's a great question. So there are definitely people, like you said, where it's like, I just want to do my job, man.
It's
Like,
with everybody. I mean, it's nothing unusual about you, right?
there's definitely those people, and there's definitely people with their own agenda where it's like, no, this is what we need to be doing. And I think, on our franchise advisory committee, right? I mean, there's a couple of voices in there that they know who they are, that they're always going like, no, we need to go this way. This is, and so it's that constant, we joke and call them, we say frenemies sometimes, where it's like, look, we're on the same team. We want what's best for the organization. We just see how we get there is different directions. It's almost like, the Democrats and Republicans, everyone wants what's best for the country, and they just think it's a different way. And so we have that. And I think there's, on one hand, it's frustrating to deal with that. And on the other hand, it definitely is like an iron sharpens iron kind of thing, where, okay, wait a minute. If I know that here you're gonna, as soon as I come up with an idea, you're gonna hit me with 10 things on why it's a terrible idea, then I better have answers going in on like why they're, and here's why it's not. As much as I think we all get frustrated with that, I've at least I've come to at least appreciate the value received at the end of the exercise. With my direct team, I'll say two things. One, as part of that, restructuring we did and bringing on the senior leadership, not everybody stuck around. I mean, it was, we brought on some people. They weren't kind of following the vibe we thought we were trying to put out there. And I think it was Lou Holtz, the late Lou Holtz now, that said, he goes, the problem, what is it? Or the way you deal with unmotivated people is you get rid of the unmotivated people. And I don't mean that in a crass or cruel way, but I think, ultimately, when you're in a room of your direct reports, and I don't want yes men by any stretch of the imagination. You have to be challenged and pressed. But if you have anyone who's like actively working against you, number one, those people, it's just time to move on. With the rest of the folks, challenge it. Let's poke and prod this thing. I think it's absolutely crucial when I come in and present an idea, I deliberately, with our senior leadership team, I present the problem. I present a two-sentence version of what I'm thinking the solution is, and say, what do you guys think? And I deliberately give very little, because what I want to have happen is I want the brainstorming to bubble up. And what I've seen personally is that when, hey, we have this issue, how would you, here's what I'm thinking, but what do you guys think? And everyone goes, well, what if we did this, or what if we did that, or whatever? And when things start lining up, what I've found is when someone feels like the idea is theirs, they're willing to work and invest in it that much more than when it's just me dictating the next thing to do. And so I'm very big on like, how do I create a situation where everyone feels bought in, because everyone feels heard and like they contributed to a portion of the strategy. And so, and frankly, admittedly, like I said, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. What I like to do is, I might have, even though I'm telling them two sentences, I might have 10 on what I think we should do. And by the end of that meeting, three of my things are not on there. Three of their things are on there, and another three things we kind of tweaked a little bit from what I originally thought. And that's what we walk out of the room with, which is like, okay, it's a third my idea, a third your idea, and a third a little bit of everybody's idea, but this is the plan. And so, and I'm very big on like, listen, once, we can all beat the crap out of each other while we're in here. When we walk out, it's one plan, one strategy, one voice. And because otherwise, everything crumbles from the inside if you don't kind of get on the same page at the end of it.
So I just to be really clear, again, I'm going to speak for myself. You can speak for yourself. If I was saying the words you just spoke, I would be saying, wow, this empowered me because I came in here with a way of looking at this. I've now got better ideas because I was open to listening to my team and to their and different perspectives they brought to it. So in fact, I'm excited because the plan we're going with is actually better, more creative, more powerful, more likely to succeed than what I walked in the room with as an initial thinking. I would
Yeah.
be excited by what happened, not because, well, I only got a third of my way.
Right.
That is a crazy, that's actually a crazy way to look at it. You can speak for yourself. I would just say, if I was in your shoes, I would be super excited because what came out of it is in all likelihood better than the
Yeah.
idea I walked in the room with.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I'm not saying there's any like love lost on it. Where it's like, oh, my idea was better, but whatever, we'll do it your way. I think it is. It creates a synergy, and I would rather have, I would rather do it less my way and have everyone be on 100% and in it for, in it to win it, so to speak, versus like fighting for like, no, it's my way or the highway. I agree with you there. I think we have to, and I'm big on encouraging risk taking. Within a reasonable amount of budget. But it's always like, we goof around now with some of the AI stuff where it's like you can plug in like, here's my business model, here's what we're doing. Give me five completely out of the box strategies that are totally, crazy sounding. And we'll actually goof around with that and then say, and then someone will be like, I think I could make something like that happen. And I go, okay, how much do you need to make that happen? Oh, X. And it's like, do it. Like, give it a shot, no questions, swing for the fences. You have to do that because otherwise, then people start getting into this like very, protective, this is, guarding my territory kind of way of thinking. And it's got to be more like, no, you're going to be rewarded for very, for taking calculated risks, not for protecting your territory.
That's great. Well, Adam, this has been a terrific conversation. Thank you for coming on the Create the Future podcast and sharing your story. And I know listeners are going to get great value from having heard your experience growing your business, and I hope you do get to the 300 million that you're targeting for. So, how can our audience learn more about you and the company if they want to get in touch with you?
So we're at anagocleaning.com. That's A-N-A-G-O cleaning.com. We're on all the social media. So, at anagocleaning for, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or not Twitter, whatever it's called, X now or whatever it's called. And then I'm very active on LinkedIn. So if you go on LinkedIn and just type in Adam Pavlitz and shoot me a note, I will be sure to respond.
All right. Well, that's great. So, I also want to thank our audience for taking the time to listen to this. I hope you found real value out of the conversation Adam and I have had this afternoon. So, I also want to say that if you have a compelling story to share about difficult decisions you've had to make for your company or yourself, come on the podcast as a guest. If you go to rickwilliamsleadership.com and then go to the Create the Future podcast section on the podcast, you can learn more about the podcast and apply to be a guest. So again, that's rickwilliamsleadership.com. So remember that when you're facing a challenging, a very difficult decision for your company, take the time to get it right and also have a little fun along the way. So, again, I hope you'll tune in to the next Create the Future podcast. Until then, have a little fun for yourself. Take care. What an interesting and inspiring conversation. I hope you found it as valuable as I did. Thank you for listening. Let me know if you have a compelling story to tell about making tough choices for your organization or for yourself. Coming on my podcast is a way to share what you have learned with a wider audience. If someone you know would be a great guest, please make an introduction. I welcome leaders with a story to tell and important learning to share. You can contact me about the podcast at podcast.rickwilliams.com. Leadership.com. That's podcast.rickwilliamsleadership.com. Please share the link to my podcast with your colleagues. They will thank you for getting them access to these valuable conversations. And finally, please give us a great rating on and subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music. Just search for Create the Future with Rick Williams. Thank you for listening to Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast, conversation with leaders who make difficult decisions and build lasting legacies.